let's continue on. We're talking about connection. So we just talked about Jimmy Carter versus Ronald Reagan. I want to talk about another president. Does anyone remember President Bill Clinton's famous line during his presidency? He may have had a pregnancy too, but we won't talk about that. There was a line that helped get him elected and made him very famous with the American people. A lot of the comedians, when they would mimic him, would use that line. Does anybody remember what it was? And it was his attempt to connect with people.
I didn't inhale.
No, that was one of his lines too. Another famous line.
But one
it's just stupid.
Was it the one on the economy? It's the economy.
Well, it was connected to the economy. The line was, and you'll remember it as soon as I tell you, I feel your pain. I feel your pain. He became famous for that line. What was that? That's a connecting line. What he's trying to do is connect with me. I feel your pain, all right? Because feelings motivate behavior. To influence people's behavior, you have to connect with them, and he realized that. Here's an interesting thing. We think that our mate, our kids, our employees, volunteers, people in our ministry, people that we meet, should do what we say because we said it.
Yeah.
Guess what? The world doesn't work that way, right? That's the whole thing of, you know, you remember when you were growing up, your parents said,
because I said so.
Because I said so, right? Because I said so may have worked at one time in the world, in America, in generations past, but I'm telling you, it doesn't work now. We are more effective as leaders when people want to do something because we've established a connection and we exercise influence. So I want to go back to something you said a few minutes ago. You talked about the use of power to get people to do things. Power is never a good motivator, okay? Because you see in leadership a lot of abuse of power, and we can abuse power lots of different ways. In fact, we could spend a whole night talking about the ways that people use power, okay? The bottom line is, we want to lead by influence, not by power in people's lives. And that's why it's so important to connect with people.
Does a lot of that have to do with the way that communication has been taught, like over the past 20 years? Because it seemed to teach a lot of the same thing going down this emotional road that turned into manipulation and then manipulation of emotions through control, right?
Yep. So
now that wall's up, so everyone wants to get emotional and connect, and you're already operating out of an agenda because of what you've experienced before.
So there's two points. You bring up a really great point, so let's talk about that. Realize that in society, you have a pendulum, right? And the pendulum never seems to swing in the middle. It always does what? It's one way or the other a lot of times. Sometimes it comes back to the middle, but after it's swung to compensate, and then, and I'm going to give you another example of this in a minute, and then it comes back in the middle. So with communication, there was a lot of top-down command and control, and that was the preferred style and the given style of leadership. But now society and culture has changed, so everything is the pendulum is swung to collaboration, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to talk about why in a moment because of millennials. And so the pendulum is swung, and now we're talking about emotions, and we're talking about emotional intelligence. We're going to talk about next week and all that stuff. Now, here's the thing. In all of this, it doesn't matter. You can abuse people, whether you're a command and control leader, authoritarian, power monger, and you can also abuse people by manipulating their emotions. So you have to see the pro and con in this. So maybe an easier one to illustrate is like in ministry. You have people that are good communicators, pastors that get this, what I'm talking about, the connection, but they use it inappropriately. they will use it to manipulate their people emotionally to get them to do what they want them to do. Good communication is not about getting people to do what I want them to do. It's about getting people to do the right thing. Okay? And so we have to, I want you to be aware that when we talk about communication, there's the good, there's the good side and the bad side. Any of this stuff we talked about, there's a dark side to it. So I could take, or you could take, all these principles that I'm teaching you now about connection, and if your motive is not right, you could say, this is great stuff. And you could use it to manipulate your mate, to manipulate and control your children, to manipulate and control ministry people under you or in your workplace and environment. And now, if you're really good, it'll take them a long time to figure out they're being manipulated.
Yes.
Now, if you're not so good at it, they'll figure it out right away, and then you're really going to be off a crick, right? But there are people out there that are just master manipulators. They're deceivers. We put them in the category, they deceive people, okay? Whether that's in the business world, I mean, you know, there's been plenty of CEOs and leaders of corporations and other high figures that they've manipulated people. You know, their stories. Okay, so it's a great point, Andrew, that we have to be careful because God holds us accountable that we're not manipulating people. There's a fine line between motivating people, connecting with people, being genuine, and then being disingenuous and manipulating people. And we've got to be careful about that. So we're talking about this whole thing of this form of communication. You know, it's not do it because I said so. Why is this important? Let's talk about this group right here, millennials. Millennials, okay, those are people that are born starting in 1980 into the early 2000s. Okay, they're the largest population group on the planet now. Okay, 83 million. They've surpassed baby boomers, which are 75 million. Okay, and now millennials are coming fully into the workplace and into the workforce. Okay. And so there's just been tons of research and articles. And if you don't know, the doctoral dissertation that I just completed was on millennials and how to work with millennials and how to attract millennials to a church. Because tons of research has been done, tons of books have been written about, you know, how they're all leaving the church, they hate the church, blah, 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 blah. But nobody ever says, well, how do we get them back?
Right.
Are there churches that are successful in getting them back? So that's what I studied. And how to do that. But the interesting thing about millennials is they do not respond to command and control authoritarian leadership styles where a leader just barks out orders and they're expected to respond. They are the generation of collaboration. Okay? They want to be included in decisions. Not that they have to make the decisions, but they want to be heard. They want to collaborate. One of their number one value, well, their number one value is relationship. And their number two value is team. Relationship and team. And so if there's not relationship, for example, if you want to attract millennials, then your church has to be built on relationship. And they have to have a sense of being a part of the team. They have to know that they're wanted, that their input is wanted, okay? They're also looking at the leadership style of the church. So some of the old style churches where the pastor is just, he rules with an iron fist, and what he says goes, and he goes up on the mountain, and he gets it from God, and he comes down, he tells you what to do. They're not having any of that, okay? They are interested in carrying out the ministry of Jesus. By the way, millennials, a lot of people are worried, like, oh my gosh, the next generation, you know, if millennials not being in the church, blah, 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 is the church going to die? You know, what's going to happen? Let me tell you, the thing that I talked about in my dissertation was that the millennials are revivalists. That if you know what their values are and you fuel them up, they're going to go and take the world. Because you know what they really want to do? You know what their number one problem with the church is? Their number one problem with the church is the church is not doing the works of Jesus. That the church has lost its vision for the poor, the marginalized, that the church is not outside the walls making a difference in the community. They want their lives to have meaning and purpose. They want to make a difference in this world. And so if they find a church, or they're introduced to a church that is in the community doing things, that has a vision for transforming lives, reaching people, they will jump on board that vision, and they'll be the first ones out the door going and doing things. Like with Life Leadership College here, these kids go out every week, and they're witnessing to people, and they have no qualms about it, and they're helping people. They're wired for it. It's in their DNA. They want to make a difference. They want to go. They don't want to sit around and talk about the works of Jesus. They want to go do the works of Jesus. So isn't it interesting that Jesus said, greater works shall you do than even I have done? And we've often wondered about that, but I'm telling you, that's a generation that takes that scripture and believes it, and they want to do the works of Jesus. So one of the things that frustrates them is top-down leadership, is a church that's turned inward on itself, that is not reaching out to the hurting and the lost and the things like that. My point is, to attract millennials, they need to feel connected to the leadership. Okay? They want to be included in the process. They want to be empowered. And when you bark out orders or directives to them, they flip the switch and they tune out. So to get them on board, when you're communicating, you have to build relationship with them. You have to build rapport. You have to identify, and you have to relate to them. Okay? And so they take a bad rap a lot of times. Now, I could talk to you about the bad things about millennials, and I could talk to you the bad things about baby boomers, and I could talk to you about the bad things about the silent generation. And every generation has its positives and its negatives, okay? And so there are some real negatives in millennial generation, just like every other generation. But I want you to know, because they don't get talked about, there's a lot of positives. And one of it is that they're ready to take the church to the next level, given the opportunity. So I wrote my dissertation that I have great hope for the future of the church. By the way, it's really funny. You can do an interesting study. You can go through every generation in history, and you can read comments from one generation towards the generation coming up, and they all say the same thing. Well, the next generation, they're just lazy. They ain't going to do anything. Man, are we going to make it? It starts all the way back with the early church. You know, but somehow we always make it, because God will always have a people. God will always have a remnant.
Yes.
God's going to continue on. He's
so
going
to
find people.
Is it always resistant to change,
though? Huh?
Has it always been resistant to change?
Yeah.
I think anytime you have an institution, you know, in the course I teach on revival history, I do a quick survey of the first 2,000 years of the church, and we come right all the way up to the 1900s. But I show how in the first 300 years, how the church morphed from being a movement into an institution. And when it became an institution, it started to have problems. That's when it started to die. That's when people became change resistant. That's when power became important, and money became important, and buildings became important, and you have all this crazy stuff start to go on. That's when the Bible gets taken away from the people. That's when people are told you can no longer pray for people for miracles, because only the bishops can do that. Only clergy, professional clergy, can pray for people, because miracles can only come through us, you know. And so you have the killing of the priesthood of the believers and that concept and all that. So, yeah. So a lot of that stuff. But here's the reason that people don't like what we're talking about tonight when we talk about identifying, relating, connecting. Because connecting takes time, and connecting takes effort.
Yes.
See, we haven't even talked about communication skills yet. I haven't talked one word yet about what's coming out of your mouth, so to speak. Tonight, I've just talked about connecting. But hopefully you're going, man, there's a whole lot that goes into communication before I even open my mouth. Connecting with people takes time and effort, okay? But when you take the time to connect, you will develop loyal and committed followers. If you're in a ministry, if you're in a business. If it's in the family, you will create a devoted family. You will have a devoted husband, a devoted wife, devoted children. Okay? Because you took the time to do all that. Okay. Going to take the final couple minutes that we have before we knock off today. I want to talk about the role that attitude plays in connecting. According to Travis Bradbury, author of Emotional Intelligence 2.0, he said that attitude is more important than intelligence as a predictor of success. That's because our attitude determines our altitude in life. Our attitude towards others also determines our ability to connect with them.
So that goes with self then too, attitude towards self.
Absolutely, absolutely. By the way, it's important that when you look at the majority of people in our world who are the wealthiest people, that are leading great organizations, they're not the smartest people on the planet. They're the people that have great attitudes and the people that have been able to connect with other people and have been able to communicate their ideas so that people will buy into them. And that's important to know because, like in, you know, in our educational system, we place a lot of importance on intelligence. But you've all met people that are so smart that they have no common what?
Sense.
They don't know how. They say that Albert Einstein didn't even know how to tie his shoes. Came up with a theory of relativity and all these theories on time. And we're grateful for that because it's amazing. But realistically, Albert Einstein wasn't a leader. Albert Einstein could not effectively communicate with people. Okay? Unless you could understand, you know, I'm always amazed. I was watching a movie not too long ago, and the board was filled with all these mathematical equations, and I'm like looking at them going, I can never understand that. I was like, who actually enjoys that stuff? You know, it's like crazy. How did they even come up with that? You're laughing because you're an engineer. Is I'm like, oh my gosh, you know? Einstein, one of the knocks on him was he couldn't really communicate to people. He was just so smart. So there's more to this thing. It's not just about being smart. It's about, I'm hammering it again, connection. Some leaders see people, get this, as an annoyance. So they don't want to be bothered with. They want as little to do with people as possible. Well, guess what? You're not going to be a good communicator if that's the way you feel about people. Some leaders interact with people only enough to get by because in their hearts, okay, their view of people is low. So you either have a high view of people, it's called a high view of people, or a low view of people. That means I love people, people are great, I believe in people, or you have a low view where in the back of your mind you're saying, people are morons. I don't want to be bothered with them. They're all idiots. Okay, so can I tell you a secret? I know some pastors that have a low view of people. That's why they preach and run. I can't imagine myself not being in the lobby after a Sunday service. I mean, for all the years I've been in ministry, I'm out there just shaking people's hands and saying, hey, have a great week, whatever. But you'd be surprised how many preachers preach and then they head right out the back doors. Okay? Why do they do that? They don't understand the stuff that we're talking about tonight. And I've talked to some of them and I've said, why are you in ministry? You know, because they say things like this. Ministry would be a great place if it wasn't for people. People is our business.
Right.
Right? How did you get in ministry? Then go teach in a university. Go write book. Go do something, but don't afflict God's people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I don't know how you can be a pastor and not love people, not care about people, not believe in people, because that's our business, all right? But we're talking about attitudes. So your attitudes affect your communication. If you think your mate is an idiot, guess what? You're not going to communicate effectively to him or her. You say, well, that's kind of harsh. But look at, there are couples that are living together and they don't have a high view of each other. They don't believe in each other, right? It could be because of the hurts that have happened in their life, the things. It doesn't matter how they got there. The bottom line is, at this point in their lives, when they look at their mate, they're not filled with belief, and I believe in you, and I love you. It's down here. And so if the attitude is down here, guess what? The communication is going to be down there. Because our attitude plays a big part in how we connect with people. And so here's the question you have to ask yourself. Do I value people? Do I value people? Here's another question. As a leader, that we have to ask ourselves concerning motive. Do I see certain people as being more important than other people because they have the ability to help me to get what I want or further my agenda? Motivation is an attitudinal question, right? So you have leaders, and you probably see this at work, that they spend a whole lot more time and attention with certain people because, or people that you work with are kind of sucking up to certain people. Why? Because they perceive that that person is important and they can help them to get where they want to go, or they can do something for them that they need. Good leaders never do that. Good leaders treat everybody equally. They treat everybody with equal value. Whether you're came in off the streets and there's nothing you can do for me, or you have 8 billion gazillion dollars, doesn't matter. That was the beauty of Jesus. Jesus was not impressed by the Pharisees. He's not impressed by the rich. And he treated them the same way as he treated the guy or the gal that was in the gutter. As he treated the woman that was caught in adultery. Yes. Right? That was an attitudinal thing. So why did people feel a connection with Jesus? Why were they drawn to him? Because of his attitude. Because they sensed, you value me.
That's good.
Right? So this is where communication is at. People spot a phony a mile away. They know if you care about them genuinely or not. Dale Carnegie, the great businessman, said this. You can make more friends in 2 months by becoming interested in other people than you can in 2 years by trying to get other people to be interested in you. So, isn't it interesting? Have you ever been around someone that talks about themselves all the time? You can't get a word into it. They're telling you about their stuff, telling you about what they've done, telling you about their accomplishments. How does that make you feel? Not a whole lot of connection going on there. You could walk away and they'd still be talking about themselves. Right?
Yes.
So here's the thing. What are we talking about tonight? Connecting and communication. How do you connect with people? Tell me about yourself. And then you're going to sit back and you're going to do what?
Listen.
So you know what I did a whole lot of doing the first year that I was... I've been here, now I've been here, what, 14 months, 15 months? That whole first year with our staff, I did a lot of, tell me about yourself, tell me about your dreams, tell me about your desires, what do you want to do, how can I help you to get there? Because I wanted to know about them. Okay? Because this is an important part of, you can't lead people until you connect with people. You can't communicate effectively to people until you've connected with them. So again, people don't care how much you know as a leader until they know how much you care about them. Connection is a personal thing. Have you ever met someone who, when they talked with you, they made you feel like you were the only one in the room? Have you ever met anyone like that? What did they do to make you feel that way?
Right in the eye.
Yeah, they looked you in the eye. Have you ever had someone who they're talking to you or they're supposed to be talking to you, but they're
right.
Looking past your head, and you pick up on it. You're like, what are you looking at? Right here. I'm right here. Okay? We had a district superintendent here in Illinois once. He's gone now. He he's passed away. He was famous. People would laugh about it. He would say, hey, how are you doing? And you'd be talking to him. He'd be looking around the room, standing for the next person he was going to go shake hands with. You know, it was maddening. It was hilarious. You had to laugh about it or you'd cry about it because it was so blatant, okay? What else do people do? How else do they, what do? That make you feel like you're the most important person in the room?
Remember your name.
That's a big one.
Yeah, they remember your name.
The space gets quiet.
Yeah.
The space really gets quiet and you find yourself in an intimate, I mean, wide open space, but all of a sudden, everything just goes and it's just...
Because they're focused on you, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
You have their undivided attention.
Yes.
Okay? These are all good communication things. Okay? Anything else that you can think of?
I like when people shake my hand, they give me a nice, firm, solid...
Yeah, magic. Don't give them the fish. Right, yeah. Have you ever done that?
Yeah.
We actually teach that in the college. I actually talked to guys about that. Don't, if you're shaking people, don't be giving them the limp wrist fish handshake. That's
you
horrible.
You have to tell women that too.
Give them a, yeah.
Yeah, you have to tell
give
women.
Give them a strong
yeah.
grip handshake. You know, now don't break their fingers, but you know. Because that communicates something. It communicates something. And a lot of times, when I do it, when I shake people's hand, I don't know if it's good or bad, it's just a habit. When I shake people's hand, a lot of times I'll grab their elbow.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'll even, you know, put them in the back. Just
yes.
to say, hey, I'm right here, you know. So, yeah, it's good. Anything else anybody wants to add to that?
Ask questions.
And they ask questions of you. Tell me about you. Well, that's interesting. In other words, the point is, they're interested in you. They don't yammer on about themselves. Okay?
And active listen.
They're active listeners.
They're not just giving you a fakeness. They're listening to you, and they can and they'll repeat what you're saying, and they'll go back later on and say something like week or so later, and bring the conversation
right.
and keep
right.
growing their relationship.
Now, all of what we've just talked about, when a person does that to you, they are communicating a message to you. And the message is this, and this is the key. I value you. That's what all those things do. When you look a person in the eye, when you give them a strong handshake, when you actively listen, okay? When you ask them questions about themselves, they're saying to you, I value you. And connecting is about valuing other people. One of the basic missteps of communication is the failure to value people, to put them first, okay? That's why people sometimes, they just don't connect with people and they don't communicate well. Concern creates connection, okay? We have to see people not only as valuable, but as worthwhile, as having something to teach us, something to contribute to us. If we look at people as having nothing to offer us, we'll miss a lot more. Here is one of the basic principles that I learned, that I live by. I can learn from everyone.
Yes.
I learn from my granddaughter every day. I learn from the little kids in this church. I learn from the teenagers in this church. I learn from our college students. I learn from everybody. Because everybody has something to teach me. And I don't care how many degrees I have. It doesn't really matter. It's not important. It's about me being open to learning from everybody to see that... You know, everybody has something to share that God has given you, and I want to learn that. We have to believe as Christian leaders that God has given every person something. And so here's what great leaders do and how they improve their communication skill. They search for the golden people. They look at people through spiritual eyes, not natural eyes. And they're always looking for the golden people. Because God has placed gold inside of every one of you. And our world teaches us to look for the what in people?
Dirt.
The dirt, the faults. But God says, I want you to look for the gold. I want you to get past all the junk, because there's gold in them. There's gold in them, their hills. Right? When you start recognizing the gold in people and calling it out of them.
Yes.
Now we're talking about real connection with people. Now we're talking about the ability not only to communicate with people, but to empower people.
Yes.
Okay? The attitude of great leaders is this. You have something valuable to offer. They see value in people. So Joe Gibbs, former NFL coach with the Washington Redskins, won a couple Super Bowls with them. Oh, I missed this one. This is a great quote by Maya Angelou, a famous poet. I've learned that people forget what you said, people forget what you did, but people never forget how you made them feel. Okay? That's an important one for us to remember. People won't always remember what you said to them, what you did for them, but imprinted in their emotions is the way that you made them feel. Man, it just felt good when I feel good when I'm around Henry. Just, man, I feel good. I feel good. You know, this is important stuff, okay? Here's Joe Gibbs. He said, you can't make the other fellow feel important in your presence if you secretly feel that he's a nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So your attitude towards people will determine whether or not you connect with them when you communicate. Now, isn't that interesting? Because when was the last time you heard in a public speaking course somebody talk about your attitude affecting your ability to communicate with people? We don't think about these things. But connection, connection, connection. So if you want to be a great communicator, learn how to connect. And that's before we ever talk about how to put together a little talk or a presentation or a devotional or anything else. You're always connecting with people. Wanting to build that rapport with people. That's why the best speakers will take the first minute or two and they'll connect with their audience in some way. They'll either, if they've come into town from those other places, smart speakers will learn a little bit about the area they're in and they'll talk about the area, or they'll say, man, I came into town and somebody told me about this great restaurant down the street. Everybody starts identifying. Oh, yeah, you went there. Yeah, that's awesome. You know, and he says, man, I had the best pizza in the world or whatever. What is that speaker doing? He's relating. He's identifying. Right? Those kinds of things. Before they ever get in the message, because it's important. All right, we're going to stop there for tonight. Next week when we pick it up, we're going to talk about principles for connecting. Next week we're going to talk about this thing called emotional intelligence. We're going to have fun with that. We're going to talk about other things. Then in week 3, we're going to start talking about the different ways that people, different patterns of speaking, patterns of hearing, how people hear, because a lot of times we're speaking in ways that people don't hear. So what are the styles? Styles of communication is what it's called. And so we'll talk about styles of how to communicate, styles of how people listen. Sometimes you have people that are, you know, it's important to know whether you have visual learners, auditory learners, tactile learners, and there are things that you can do to, once you figure that out, that'll just ramp up your ability to communicate with people. Employees at work. Here's the great fallacy, or the thing that you need to understand. All people are not created equal, and one size does not fit all. So you better know amongst your employees or know with your children. I communicate totally differently to my oldest son, from my oldest son to my youngest son. If I tried to communicate to them the same way, it would be a disaster because they are totally different in personality. And then my daughter who's in the middle, I communicate with her differently still. Because if I just treated my kids as one size fits all, hey, you're just getting it all the same, it wouldn't work. Some of them be left out. Somebody get lucky, and then the other two be going, what are you talking about? You know, or I wouldn't be able to relate to them. So all this stuff affects your family. So how do they learn? How do they understand? All that stuff is important. We'll talk about that in week 3. Okay? Hey, thanks for coming tonight. Hope you get something out of it.